live from Plant Lab in Austin, Texas, this is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name's Carr with my BFF Keon.
Hello, I'm Keon. Like
we're complimenting your hoodie this week.
Oh, yeah.
Or today, I should say.
I got my...
You got a really cool hoodie. Check that out.
My Silk Road hoodie.
Yeah, I saw it earlier. I was like, is that a Silk Road hoodie? Or I said Silk... What did I say? Silk Network hoodie?
Yeah, you said Silk Market.
Silk Market
and hoodie? Ted thought I was representing the fabric.
Oh, I didn't understand that. I guess. Where did you get that from? It's really nice.
I got it from Strike.
Oh, when they released it a long time ago, huh?
Yeah, they had like a really short-lived, like a 24-hour fundraiser where you could buy shirts and hats, I think, and stuff.
Ross, right?
And it would, all 100% of the proceeds went to Ross, and I bought a hoodie and a shirt.
Yeah, I remember. What'd you do with the shirt?
I still have it.
Oh, you still had it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's dirty right now, but I still have it.
It's a cool hoodie, man.
Yeah.
Cool. How was your week?
It was great. It was pretty good. I think it was starting... Last Friday, I started watching sports. For the first time in my adult life, other than the Super Bowl.
I got him hooked. This guy got him hooked.
Has nothing to do with Carr. I was already interested. But I wasn't. I like a local sports team doing well. That's when I used to watch sports back when I lived in California. It was when I was like a 49ers kid. And it's been a while, but it's nice having the Spurs. Doing well, or not so well recently, but possibly doing well.
We didn't know earlier in the week.
That's true.
It was
so
just...
We went to a few. We didn't go to any games, but we went.
We went to Buffalo, or
that's not a game.
Pluckers.
We watched the game
at Pluckers
amidst other people who were watching the game at a local establishment.
Yeah.
A couple times, so we did that,
and then we went to Woodrow's too, and we saw him win.
Woodrow's fun. I like how Texas has a lot of exclusively outdoor venues where there is no real indoors, like Lou's. Oh, yeah, I love going to Lou's on the east side. I think there's also one south, but there is no indoor seating. It's just all outside.
Yeah, it was cool. See, because we won, and then the day we didn't watch it together. They lost.
They lost at the super end of the fourth quarter.
That one, off
the rim.
That one upset me so much because we were watching it at the saloon right there on Barton Springs. And then we literally left at halftime to go meet our other friend down south, South Austin.
Oh.
And I've never been to that bar before, but it's, you know, there's all these weird bars in South Austin. So I walk into it and it's just like bizarro world. And then we start losing. And I'm just like,
South Austin is notorious, or like sections of South Austin used to be like the red light district of Austin. That's what I'm told by people who have lived in Austin for a long time. There was most of South Austin was prostitutes.
Whoa. Shots fired. Anyway, yeah. So we watched the game.
It isn't anymore. It's very yuppie.
Yeah. So we watched the game and they start losing and it's just like my whole world flips upside down. It was, should have never left, dude. There's some things, you know.
They came back from like a 29-point loss.
Yeah, it was so bad. So I'm not even gonna bother watching Saturday. I'm not watching. I refuse to watch. Yeah.
I'm gonna watch. I don't think it's you and me watching that was lucky. I think it was me watching. So I missed that game or they lost.
Oh, you missed that game? You didn't watch it? See, there you go. Should have just watched it. Anyways, if you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover the top three stories in Bitcoin every week here on Stacker.news. This week, we got some exciting ones. Do you see who that person is on that hood?
Yeah, that looks like...
According
to HBO, that is Satoshi.
Is that Satoshi?
That's Satoshi with a gun, hood? Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of funny that HBO did a whole documentary on him. But yeah, I thought that was a really crazy picture, but you know... That's what Bitcoin developers do. Do crazy things sometimes. Anyways, we're going to cover that and more here on Stacker News Live. With that, let's jump into the number three top story this week. It's XYZ Vault. We can't see your data versus we won't look. Which one matters to you? This is from XYZ Vault, Bitcoin Territory, 12 comments, 22,000 sats. Keon, What's this?
Yeah, XYZ Vault is a play on collaborative custody using secure enclaves. So it's kind of a lot like Unchained or Casa, but they're using compute that has like restrictions on it, and they can make claims about their lack of access to it. In the case of some, I'm sure like the older custodians are also using secure enclaves for a variety of applications, but certainly they weren't. Secure enclaves weren't super popular around the time they started, so it's a relatively new phenomenon. And they're basically doing something like Unchained, using secure enclaves, so using a different technology, and you encrypt in your browser one of a two of three multisig, and they hold that in a secure enclave for you in the cloud. They charge $250 a year. But yeah, kind of the same thing. You have two of your keys. They have one of them, and if you lose one of your keys, you can.
So it's exactly like Unchained, basically. You know, you can take your keys, throw it in Sparrow, and yeah, right.
Yep. They only have one of your keys. They can't spend your Bitcoin. Even if they're lying to you, I don't think their code is open source. I went looking. I couldn't really find it. Even if they're lying to you about what their back end looks like and what their front end code is like, they can't do much with that. That one key and the XPub, right, and other information they give you. So
they can still watch your addresses spin up and
all. Yeah, but that. I think they do. You know, if you're generous with them and they say that they're encrypting all of that, you know, all the kind of metadata associated with your wallet, client side, and that is what sits in the secure enclave. And yep.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder. So is it that, let me ask you a really dumb question. Is it that really important to have the secure enclave in there as a factor or no? Like how important is that?
I think it is. If you have things like attestations and the code is open source, I'm actually not super familiar, but I know this is something that usually accompanies some of the open source secure enclave tools, where they are saying this is the version that they can prove on some level. Then they can prove that this is the version running in the cloud. Like they have a hash and it's like signed, and they can prove to you your client is only communicating with the thing that is attested to. I'm not actually super ignorant of this stuff, so I don't know exactly, but it does improve. If they do reveal all of this, if they do reveal the attestations and these other things to you, it does reduce the level of trust you have to place in them. That's kind of, I think, the main.
That's the whole point of having another party hold your
yes key. Because right? With, I think, more traditional collaborative custody platform services, they do know how much Bitcoin you have. And so most of what you gain here, I think, is privacy.
Oh, interesting. So in that way, that's where it's going to differ in some of these other services.
Yeah. And I should note, I haven't used it. I haven't read the code. I don't know anything about, like, there's no information about who actually released this. They boosted this into the top stories. So that's why we're talking about it. It might be, as far as I know, it might be a complete scam. Like I have no idea. If you are considering using collaborative custody for your multisig, look into it and make sure that
they're trustworthy. I think the ideas around this are pretty interesting, though. I think if you just look at it just based off of like what it says it can do in the news and that kind of aspect, there's something really interesting about a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the generous approach, they're honest, they're saying what they're doing, that I think it is a meaningful improvement or difference over other collaborative custodians. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of more secure enclave applications in Bitcoin.
Yeah, interesting. So the top comment from this post was, Scoresby said, this is interesting, but I have to admit, I'm somewhat confused by one thing. Your server stores an encrypted version of vault names, device information, wallet configuration file, everything, end quote. However, is the one key you have the platform key also part of what is stored in this manner? If it isn't, can't you
can't you still see all of my transactions? And then XYZ Ball comes in there and says, good question. No, the platform key alone cannot reveal your transactions. So it looks like he's kind of saying the same thing about how you were talking about the attestation, huh? Or am I completely missing this?
Yeah, I think that's roughly right. Yeah, it seems to be mostly a privacy gain over other collaborative custodians. They can, of course, disappear, like Unchained can disappear, but you still have enough keys to spend.
Is this similar to what Aleko, because I talked to Aleko, so he's friend of the lab, he's building that new product with secure enclaves. Is this similar to that? Mm-hmm. As far as like using that sort of technology, but this in this
yeah, they sense, share they share the secure enclave stuff.
Okay, yeah, cool and, stuff.
Yeah, what Alekos is doing is trying to make it easier to build platforms like this
onto that. Yeah,
yeah, onto using secure enclaves. Yeah, yep.
Cool stuff. All right, with that, we're gonna jump into our number two story this week. It's Toyota Hilux truck delivery to Kramatorsk, Ukraine, part one. This is from Peter Todd, 112,000 sats. Wow, 14 comments in the travel territory. Keon, where is Peter Todd traveling this week?
Yeah, back to Ukraine. So Peter Todd did another truck delivery, I think a month ago or so, that he also
look at this photo, dude.
Wrote about on Stack.
You think
news.
He's serious about his traveling?
Yeah, some swag. He's got some zero drop footwear.
His finger is not on the trigger, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I can't really see, but safety's probably on.
I think it looks, it's not on the trigger. It's
yeah. Anyway, yeah, so he raised enough funds again to deliver another truck to the front lines in Ukraine. This time it was a Toyota Hilux.
Dude, that looks really good. I mean, the truck.
Yeah, this is a version, I think, of the same truck that a lot of the online community kind of salivates over, where it's like a really simple, minimal truck that's like 10 grand or something, and just kind of does the bare, you know, doesn't have AC. It doesn't have.
Oh, it doesn't have.
It doesn't AC? Have. Well, I'm sure it does, but like you can get versions of it that are super stripped down. And you can, and it's just like kind of bare bones. And that's kind of like the Bitcoiner's dream. It's like cheap as heck and does the bare minimum and gets you around and looks like it does the bare minimum. And it's cool. So that's what it is. He apparently has some kind of partnership, I think, in his fundraising for Ukraine with some kind of shit coin, that allowed him to get $41,000 towards the cause of supplying Ukraine with supplies. This is them touring the vehicle that he ended up delivering, where they did like improvised armor using steel plates. I think he said it was 250 kilograms of.
Oh, that's all bullet.
It's not bulletproof, but it is, because I think most of what they need to be concerned about is shrapnel from drones, and you know, I guess more direct drone hits, and so having that kind of plating there where it protects the head of anyone occupying the truck. I think they said they plated the entire door too. Also, they show that the rear cab, another plate. Can't see out the rear view mirror, but it protects you from shrapnel entering that rear window. They also armored a little bit under the hood, the radiator armored a little bit, the battery, I think the air intake as well. So it can
can't see out through the back or anything there, it looks like, huh?
Yeah, but I would guess the areas that they're in, they're not really, there's not a lot of traffic.
He's gonna open up the hood now.
Yeah, that shows just a little bit of it. But this is cars for Ukraine, and they produce these cars. I think they raise money and then.
Is that a V6 or what kind of engine is that?
It says D4. It could be a four-cylinder truck. That would make a lot of sense for. It might be a diesel.
Oh, it might be a diesel. Yeah.
Yeah. I would assume diesel still use cylinders.
Yeah.
I haven't really done much work on a diesel. Yeah. So he ends up, I think it's a 12-hour drive over the course of 2 days. He drives from where he started.
There he goes right there.
This is him making a stop in Kiev to get a
refrigerator. It looks like,
yeah, a refrigerator. I think he also got a small like a mini generator, because those are some of the things that they asked for.
Dude, look at that drive.
Yeah, he said it was a bit longer because the Google Maps course took him like too close to the front lines. And
oh, you mean over here somewhere, like where, like
he shows a map below of where the front lines are. Below more, I think. There you can see where the red is on the
bottom. Yeah. So these are all the danger zones, I guess.
Yeah, this is like right where the, you know, active warfare is happening.
Oh wow.
And so he was always trying to stay 20 kilometers or more. I think the closest he said he got was 20 kilometers, but he said once you get 15 kilometers or so.
Is this him pulling up to it?
No, this is him getting gas, I think.
Okay. Oh, he's putting on his bulletproof vest. Wow, dude.
Yeah, he said he was doing the journey alone this time.
It's pretty wild how like non. Look how calm he looks. He's just like, yep, this is life.
I would think it's probably somewhat therapeutic to have.
I mean, but look really at his face. He just looks so
adrenaline
calm.
Like that.
He looks like me when I'm just like taking out the trash. It's like, yep, there we go. Look how calm he looks. He's just like, yep, pull up fast. Time to go to work.
Well, he interviews a soldier, calls himself an ambassador later when he delivers the truck. And that guy also seems
pretty calm too.
Pretty chill. I think people are just who they are regardless of the situation, especially if it's like a long-term situation and not an acute one.
Yeah, like if you're putting your life in danger, it's probably one of those things where you've like already made amends to like anything bad could happen. And it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm sure your heart rate's slightly elevated and stuff on a regular basis, but you do. I think humans are super adaptable.
What is that? Is that net catching a drone there?
Yeah, that is like a drone frame, and he said he doesn't really understand how it got there because if a drone actually hit there, it would have made a hole. Because that's what these nets are for, is triggering whatever explosives are on the drone.
I'm more curious. Do the drones have to get that close to be precise?
Yeah, the drones are usually, as far some of the drone videos that I've seen, they are, you know, just kind of a retail drone that you would expect with an improvised explosive device on it. I'm sure they're much more advanced now. And then there's some kind of trigger mechanism so that when it gets proximity or runs into something, it explodes.
Oh, wow. So this is probably, yeah, I see what he's saying. That's why he's saying that.
Yeah,
because there's even more video. Oh, wow. He's an ambassador, looks like. So he's kind of explaining the truck here, what he's giving him.
Yeah.
How did he get back, though?
I would guess they're regularly doing supply runs in and out, and he can get a ride with anyone else going the other way. Maybe carpooled, hitchhiked. I don't know. I mean, there is a camera person, but
maybe they're just like following behind him or something.
Yeah, it's possible. But he said he was going alone, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Last time he had a woman with him in the videos.
Yeah. Then he's. Then they're just kind of thinking everybody.
Could be the shit coin that was sponsoring him that had the camera there. I don't know. But he did raise more money in the shit coin, which is, you know, kind of what you'd expect versus his Bitcoin. So.
Well, I mean, Bitcoiners tend to be, you know, not very war centric as far as like picking sides or even spending money for war. So it would make sense.
So, I mean, we don't really have the same pump as a shitcoin that's going to lose a lot of value. You just kind of get rid of it and donate it while it still has value.
That's a wild picture, dude. When I saw it today, I was just like, what is going on? It was my first time seeing this. Wild stuff, man. Anyway, so here at the end, it looks like he gives like a Bitcoin address if people want to donate.
Yep.
There you go. Wow. I love seeing these stories, though. I feel like this is the second one we've seen from him, right? Is that right? We've seen this will be the second
one. This will be the second one. I think he said he has another two posts he's going to do.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't know if they are accompanied by other vehicle deliveries or something else.
Keep them coming. Keep them coming, Peter Todd. I love seeing this kind of stuff. Let's jump into the number one top story this week is, I'm confused. How can I own less than one Bitcoin? This is from Rizful, 18 comments, 232,000 cents. Keon, what is going on?
Yeah, this is another big boost promoted post in the top post for the week from Rizful. They apparently have a gift card mechanism on their website where you can purchase a digital gift card and get a redeem code, give the redeem code to somebody, and they can come on to Rizful and enter the redeem code and get I think they call it a vault, but effectively a bit of wallet or credits. I don't know if you're able to withdraw them. I haven't tried it yet. And then you can either use their services or maybe withdraw it. I think that picture is not. I don't think they actually send you a physical one. Mm. But it is kind of a cool picture. I hope they generate that picture for every purchase you make and just kind of edit it. But that is
pretty much
that it. Is the idea. I was a little bit at first, but I think their idea is that they're allowing you to purchase proof that you can give to someone where you give them 5,000 Satoshis and they can begin to experience what less than one Bitcoin is and how to acquire it.
So that's okay. That makes sense. Yeah. And that's all the top three stories this week here on Stacker News Live. We're going to jump into Wumble's picks. But before we get into that, Keon, guess what we have this week?
What do we have?
Our first ever Stacker News Live sponsor.
We've gotten that big. Have we blown up like that?
We're not too big yet, but one of our friends of the show, everybody knows him as Neat Creations. He built a website called Bitcoin Education Archive, and this is what he's sponsoring Stacker News Live. Turns out he's looking for some help getting the word out on all this stuff, and I said, hey, we need a sponsor. We need to start doing this kind of stuff. And who better yet to start than with Neat Creations? He's also the co-owner he's the owner of the Christian Editor Territory,
mm-hmm.
but he also does a lot of stuff in his home state of New Hampshire.
He runs
conferences like Camp Nakamoto. And one of his latest endeavors is the Bitcoin Education.quest app. So if you haven't played with it, it's pretty ginormous as far as like a lot of different things you can do. There's a whole quest to it. There's like mini apps. There's some videos. There's some content. You basically go in here and let's say if you're a new person, you've never heard of the Bitcoin memes, you can click on the memes and then you start getting experience points based on all that stuff. And you can kind of see where a lot of the memes come from, why Bitcoiners say the things they say. He even has it here at the bottom where you can, use... Where is it at? Right here. You can even use like an LLM to search. He even has like the Bitcoin network where it's at right now. There's a lot of stuff going on here. But I think at the very least, if you want to show your support for his website, bitcoineducation.quest, you can head over to his Geyser. So he just started a Geyser campaign where he's trying to raise some money to get some of the... Because a lot of the stuff that he did here on the Bitcoin Education app is entirely him and his friend. But now he's trying to do even more and grow Bitcoin adoption locally and beyond. So right now, as you can see, there's been some people already have donated. Some stackers have gone in there and donated. And he's pretty much trying to bootstrap this. So if you're interested in either checking out the website, bitcoineducation.guest, go there. You can scan this QR code here on the screen.
I think it's .quest.
.quest. Go there and you can automatically start playing with it on your phone too as well. And if you just want to show support for another stacker, another pleb who's trying to build out something incredible, head over to Geyser, click on that. We'll have the links in the show notes. And with that, I want to say thank you to Phil for supporting Stacker News Live.
Yeah, our first sponsor.
Yeah.
We haven't had one before, right? Not even like a little one.
Never had one before.
Yeah.
Yeah, never had one before. Wow. Cool. Let's jump into Wumble's picks. The wonderful world of Wumble never ends every week here on Stacker News Live because Wumble's always searching for what's out there, what's current, and what's happening on the different territories in Stacker News. This is the one that he found this week. It was in the privacy territory that Scoresby posted. It's called Age Verification Company Yodi Rejects User for Using Graphene OS. Keon, did you read this?
Yeah, it looks like recently we've had a lot of these companies crop up, but you know, like I think most of the public conversation around this revolves around Discord because you know it's quite a popular service and a lot of young people use it, and it's one of the there was like an assassination attempt that involved it, or no, there was an assassination of Charlie Kirk that involved it, or someone else, I don't remember, but Discord. A number of services are using these third-party age verification services, and one of them is Yodi, and it looks like Yodi does not like your attempts to respect your privacy, so much so that they think you attempting to remain private while using services online is worth flagging you for suspicious activity, reporting you to their security team and the authorities. Someone on Reddit, they were using Graphene and were trying, I forget exactly which service they were trying to use, but they were trying to use some service. They tried to, Yodi was a third party verifier and they attempted to do age verification with Yodi. And I think they lost access to the service and contacted Yodi. And that's what Yodi said. It's like, you're using Graphene, you know, more or less Graphene is bad. And we reported you to authorities. Our automated systems flagged you. And basically, they can't get enough hooks into your operating system to determine enough about you to feel satisfied that they know you. And they think that's, you know, the only motivation to do that is criminal.
So they think it's related to Graphene? Is that's their primary take from here?
That's what the email said. It's like, you are using graphene is, I forget exactly the terms, and it's too
so it's bad to use graphene. Wow.
From Yodi's perspective, from the age verifier's perspective, from the people trying to KYC the entire internet.
Well, I'm not surprised by this. I mean, I don't know if you saw the news this week, but Delaware is gonna, they have it on the floor to ban Bitcoin ATMs. I think you're already seeing this with Graphene. I think you're going to see even more from major platforms here pretty soon. I think it's good that people are flagging this now, but I think you're going to see even more shutdown requests around Bitcoin and around stuff like Graphene that allows you to circumvent some of these.
Yeah, I mean, what's kind of weird is it sounds like he was actually trying to verify his age. Like he wasn't trying to circumvent anything. He just happened to be using Graphene OS, probably because he wanted maybe he just was interested in open source alternative operating systems and had no interest in circumventing anything. But he went to go verify his age, and just because he was using Graphene OS, they flagged his account. And
yeah. The question that Wumble has, is it likely the world is going to move towards KYC, know your computer, where certain operating system, Graphene OS, and internet connection, Tor, get you flagged as a troublemaker? Keon, that's Wumble's question this week.
It does seem to be going that way. I think that's mostly because we've handed it to these companies on a platter where most of our time online, or most the average person's time online, is spent using one of two operating systems, either iOS or Android's operating system. And so it's kind of easy for them to say this, you kind of need this to be able to participate on the internet now, because that's how, I don't know, maybe it's like 60%, 70% of people are accessing the internet. And it's really easy for the people who are currently voting on these kinds of laws and voting those people into office to not understand all the technology behind this and the implications. They just hear things like child porn and, you know, teens watching stuff or getting access to certain, you know, radical content or whatever. And they're like, well, yeah, why not just require them to use their phone if that solves the problem? I think that's, so I think we will see more of this. I hope it doesn't succeed. I hope, usually what happens, I mean, I think you saw this a lot with Microsoft. I think one of the nails in the coffin of Microsoft being the operating system everyone used was a lot of their, what was it called? Like DRM stuff, where they were getting a little too in your, like inside of your, what you thought was your private property and revealing to you that it wasn't really your private property. And you had you had given them money for them to invade on your privacy and take more things from you.
Gaslighting or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of what this, I'm hoping we still have whatever caused us to kind of rebel against Microsoft a little bit.
So I'm really bullish on in-person stuff. I know here in the Bitcoin space, we're at an all-time low as far as like attendance to meetups and stuff like that. But I'm super bullish on in-person stuff just because that's the only way you're going to be able to get this information. It's not going to be through, or maybe it'll still be through online sites and stuff like that, like Stacker News. But I think more and more you'll start seeing that kind of clamp down. Hopefully you don't get anything like this, Keo.
Yeah, there's a possibility that we'll go to a complete Star Wars world.
Yeah.
And everything's in person. There's huge wealth gaps, huge power gaps.
Everybody's spending in credits.
Yeah, there's like weird, there's like a galactic currency.
I mean, I would not be shocked if we see that. I feel like that is exactly where it's going. Cool. That is Wumble's picks. Tune in next week when we discover more of the wide world of Wumble. This guy right here, Wumble's picks. I wonder how Wumble feels about me saying Wumble's picks every week.
I would guess he feels fine with that. He hasn't complained,
I think,
right?
I think he is. Maybe he is. Look, Wumble's picks. I wish there was animation here. We're going to jump into Keon's post. Keon, you had, we just launched a Bitcoin ARK on the mainnet. What is this?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to, this is an AMA that we did with Grubles, not Grubles, about, I think he works at Second Tech, where they released, I think, the first mainnet ARK wallet, which was developed by Barak and team, also with, I forget his name, but I don't know why I forget his name. I've actually met him more times in person. They developed ARK together. And so right now we have two ARK companies and Second Tech is one of them. And they released a mainnet wallet. I haven't used it yet. They did an AMA. I just wanted to let people know that there was a new wallet on the scene with, you know, its own trust trade-offs and stuff. But it might be fun, you know, if you're an early adopter and like this, it probably has all kinds of, you know, things to watch out for as a first time user. But if you're an early adopter and you like kind of discovering those nooks and crannies, you might want to give it a shot. But we did an AMA with them. If you have, you know, anyone who had any questions about them, some of the questions quite hostile. I forget some of them, but there were some people who chimed in and they're like, I think ARK is a scam. I don't, at the time I saw them, they didn't have responses to them yet, but there might be responses in there. But yeah, you can come into this thread and learn about how they think about it. I think we had Grubles, we had, I think, one of the founders from a second. We had Steven Roos on there as well. I think is also a founder, but crew in there asking about
a lot of people in here.
Yeah, politics.
Even EK came back, it looks like.
Yeah, Arcus Channel Factories.
Yeah, it looks like it's an overall successful AMA. Maybe do another one. It almost seems like there should be another one of these with all the different implementations of ARK, or no?
There's only two.
Okay.
Yeah, the other one, I forget. Arcade, I think it's the other one.
Oh, okay. I thought there's like four of them, but okay. So there's only two now.
As far as I know, there's only two companies that are trying to produce
main that's just wallets. The one that what's his name? Gosh, I'm forgetting his name.
Brock?
No, Roos, and then what was the other one? Tierra.
Tierra. That's what I was trying to think of earlier.
Cool. Awesome. Let's jump into your next one. You had the True and Accurate History of Bitcoin podcast. Keon, what is going on here? You have a podcast. I have a podcast. There's some truth in podcasts.
What?
I don't know. I was trying to make something work there.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. Scoresby went deep and tried to figure out searching for the first ever Bitcoin podcast and maybe trying to identify the arc of the history of Bitcoin podcasts. This is like the result of that. He kind of covers early on. He covers like kind of the current era and then walks to the very early history of Bitcoin podcasting and when the first Bitcoin podcasts were. Trying to think of things that are, I mean, there's a lot in here.
I feel like that era was the best era for me personally, the 2017-21 era.
Well, that's the era you like.
Yeah, that was like a lot of really good Bitcoin podcasts.
That does seem to be like the Cambrian explosion of Bitcoin podcasts was around then. I think he mentions that. Or I think he says, or might have been around 2020, but 2015 era, Bitcoin Uncensored. We've been accused of, at one point we were, I don't think we're nearly as fun, but at one point we were accused of being like Bitcoin Uncensored.
What? I've never heard that before.
Yeah, it was I remember we discussed it on the podcast too, where someone replied to us, I think on X when it used to be called Twitter, and they were like, you guys remind me of the Bitcoin Uncensored guys. And neither of us knew about what it was.
I met June Seth before, but I've never listened to their podcast. Not because I'm just too busy.
I think we just have like too much clothing, probably, and like not enough profanity to.
We're too buttoned up.
We're too censored. We're Bitcoin censored.
We're too buttoned up.
There are some like pretty obscure podcasts that happened around the time. Most of them kind of fizzled. They only had a few episodes or so. Some of the ones that kind of stuck around that were very early. Where Carr's at in the post were around 2011 or so. Sorry.
Where were you at here?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah. Around 2011 or so is when it really takes off. I'm not exactly sure why. Scoresby references a Gawker piece. I think
that was the big one. So I actually heard about Bitcoin the first time through Leo Laporte's network, Twit. And then, but he was reporting on Slashdot article. A Bitcoin Slashdot article, and then I heard it through Leo Laporte because he was reporting on that, and then that's how I found out about Bitcoin the first time it touched. Right, that was my first touch.
That was your first touch,
yeah. But it didn't land. It wasn't until like the Rogan stuff.
Yeah. So Scoresby associates like somewhat of the.
That sounds about right. 2011. That would have been probably when it was the first time. 2010, somewhere around there.
Yeah. This post from Gawker was in the summer of 2011 in June. But shortly after that, we saw quite an uptick. Mm-hmm. But then you can go even further back, because Scoresby's looking for like the first podcast that discussed Bitcoin explicitly. Like the intent of the podcast was discussing Bitcoin. And there, as you get farther and farther back, you get back. It's mostly around
it was on a tech channel
early 2011.
Yeah, so I could see that.
Yeah, I think one of the first most popular Bitcoin shows around that time was the Bitcoin show.
That's such a cool graphic. I don't know why I like that.
It's on ruled paper and it's kind of grade schoolish.
Looks fun.
Yeah, it is like a fun thing. I think it's Bruce Wagner who put on this show. And then I think shortly after My Bitcoins, which was an exchange wallet situation like they had very in the early Bitcoin days, they basically rugged everyone, or something happened to My Bitcoins. But Bruce Wagner was promoting My Bitcoins on their podcast, and I think felt quite a bit of shame around it. Bruce Wagner, I think Scoresby mentions in here, I think he was also responsible for the earliest Bitcoin conferences.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But he was like kind of one of few people in the very early Bitcoin media space. And then what else do we have here? Yeah, he interviewed Eric Voorhees and Charlie Shrem. I think he says that the first podcast ever that was Bitcoin focused was a podcast by Atlas.
This one here.
Audio only. Oh, wow. It's called the This is Atlas alone, I think, monologuing. Probably about things that are going on in the Bitcoin Talk org forum.
Oh, he's even talking about how prices are declining.
Interesting. I think around this time is when Mt. Gox got hacked.
Yeah, he's kind of reporting on it like if it's the exports.
It's like, it's like actively happening. I mean, I read some of the trends. I was hoping to watch one of these episodes or listen to a few of them, but some of the...
To see what you could learn?
Mostly to see how they thought about Bitcoin.
Oh, okay.
And what they said about Bitcoin.
Well, I think you've heard Bitstein speak before, right? Like, remember, like, he's talked about it with me before, and I've heard him speak before. Those era of Bitcoiners talk about it like where it's like, it's just like it's one of those things where I don't think we would ever know what that's like to discover something and see how it turned out. As far as like a technology, but I will say they definitely, it's just a different time, man. It's just, couldn't imagine. Like, it does seem like they have a deeper understanding of where it's going than I would say most people, the longer they've been around.
They're certainly more removed from like the day-to-day of Bitcoin. I don't think they are super concerned about the short-term action that happens in Bitcoin because they've seen a lot of it and it's all just kind of a little bit of the same.
They've seen every type of personality come through and they know exactly how it's going to play out. That's the scary part, right? It's like they've seen every type.
Yeah, but they do think about Bitcoin differently. A lot of them are calling both Atlas and Plato, which is the next story we'll cover, both called Bitcoin the people's money.
I get behind that.
Yeah, I think this was like the Occupy Wall Street era. I think a lot of Bitcoiners perhaps were part of that movement, and that's why they're calling it people's money. But that feels like something we don't really say anymore. Maybe it's just like too cliche or whatever, or too easy to say. Atlas maybe produced the first ever podcast that didn't last very long. And then that was a truly Bitcoin podcast, not an interview with a Bitcoiner on the podcast, but a full Bitcoin podcast. And then he did another podcast with, I believe, Adam Levine, who calls himself, who went by Adam.
Oh.
And, or no, maybe
it's A-T-O-M, Matt. Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I don't know. I'm not looking at the post right now. But they went and started a podcast called Bitcoin Talk that I think was later renamed Let's Talk Bitcoin. But that was a few weeks after Atlas had already created.
It does make me think like all the packs that were made back then and whether they like still stuck with those packs, not individuals, but like in packs that they made with each other. I'd be interested in finding that out.
Yeah, I think Scoresby went and tried to contact some of them and see if they could give him more input or like direct him towards earlier episodes. He ended up getting June Seth to reply to him on X about where to find early Bitcoin Uncensored episodes. So he was able to find the first ever episode. I think talked to Adam. I was able to dig up some stuff because originally Atlas started Our Bitcoin. He was the mod of that before abandoning it.
Look at this post.
So this is the first ever, as far as Scoresby could figure out, this is the first ever like Bitcoin focused podcast episode.
Bruce Wagner,
the guy we mentioned,
a Bitcoiner's name too.
Yeah, it's the guy we mentioned earlier just a few minutes ago.
This guy right here?
Who did the Bitcoin show. No, that's the guy who has the radio show. And Bruce Wagner was just a guest who was, again, the guy who started the first Bitcoin conferences. Wow. Had maybe the most popular Bitcoin podcast.
What a legend. In this era. Dude, what a legend.
This was December 2010.
Gosh. He was the one that had all these amazing ideas.
So the first Bitcoin podcast.
Whatever happened to him? Is he still around?
He did. So he lost 25,000 Bitcoin in that mybitcoins.com rug. And that might, I think he got his relationship, because he was telling a lot of people to use the service because it was a popular service at the time.
Yeah.
So I think he felt kind of responsible, and people started accusing him of being in league with the rug poolers. And I think he maybe separated himself.
So he's retired, I guess.
I don't know. I don't think Scoresby followed up with him, or maybe he's not online much anymore.
Well, Bruce, if you're out there, come to Stacker News. Build your 25K sets. Build your 25K sets. Maybe not 25,000 Bitcoins anymore, but definitely get 25,000 sats. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think even then, Bitcoin was at least, I think the trough of 2011 was maybe $30 a Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
That's when I was like, man, what happened to our to our Bitcoin price?
I'm looking at the block clock over here, and it's like 63K.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it does take these types of people, like the Bruce Wagners, to say, hey, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and do something. I'm capable. I can do all these things. I have, you know, whatever. And just do it. I mean, there's something to be said about that. And I feel like that's what I love about Bitcoin the most, is like when you find like a capable person with the right tools, the right network, and the right amount of Bitcoin. I feel like that's when like the really cool stuff gets built. That's when the cool stuff gets built. And that's when you start seeing the subtle change. And I think he was one of those for sure, right? Like he started it. And now because of him, we're talking on air about Bitcoin podcasts. Really cool stuff.
Legend. Yeah. I thought it was cool. I'm super out of touch with very early Bitcoin. So it was nice to learn about all this stuff and be able to, I do want to go back and watch some of these podcasts. One of the fun podcasts he found was a 12-year-old.
I think I see it up here.
Yeah, a 12-year-old who did an episode. He had like a tech YouTube show where he would like unbox things, but he also did an episode on I think the first Android Bitcoin wallet.
Oh, wow.
With him and his friend.
That's cool.
Looks like an old 12-year-old, but
there's so much history. I'm surprised no one's made like a History of Bitcoin encyclopedia book or something. You know what I mean?
I think they have. I think
they have.
Yeah, I think there are books out there. Genesis of Bitcoin.
It covers everything from the beginning.
Oh, you mean like a really huge one?
Like a huge, not one that you buy, but like something that covers like this stuff, and then like, well, maybe Stacker News will turn into that. Maybe you'll just become like a plethora of like early Bitcoin history, as far as like what actually happened.
Well, and, we're at least doing a month of it. I don't know about encyclopedia stuff, but we do have quite a few cool posts about early Bitcoin history right now.
Cool stuff, man. That just goes to show you, Keon, the you're standing on the shoulders of giants.
I am. I think
everybody is. I think everybody has come before you and Bitcoin. You're standing on paved the way.
Just in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is all just
the podcast stuff. This is not even covering like the developer stuff or the or any of the other stuff, the miner stuff, the network stuff, everything.
Yeah, it's all so intertwined.
Cool. Let's jump into your next post. You had the adventures of Plato, the world's first Bitcoin road trip. This is from Billy the Kid. What's this?
So this also took place in 2011, around block 113,800, which I think was in March of 2011. Plato, who was frequent on the Bitcoin Talk forums, saw another user post a bounty for that they would give 400 coins to someone who spent a month living off of Bitcoin. That inspired them to consider doing this road trip where they would only spend Bitcoin. And so they had
in 2011.
2011.
Wow.
Yeah, trying to do that. I mean, try to do that now and you're still
doable. It's doable now, but yeah, back then I don't even know how you would do it.
Yeah. Billy the Kid mentions that it isn't exactly like we think of it now. It's more so you are transacting with other Bitcoiners. who along your route who are willing to trade you food or whatever for Bitcoin. And yeah, so he saw that post on bitcointalk.org for 400 bitcoins, and he started thinking about this, and apparently the guy did not end up wanting to pay. He like took the bounty down, but he still stuck with it and did the trip. He starts somewhere in the Northeast and goes all the way up to the Northwest, coming through Austin, going down the East Coast, coming through Austin, going through the Midwest, up through Oklahoma, to Wyoming, and then back down through Los Angeles, and then all the way up. And there's a card just showed a graph. So these are the locations of Bitcoiners on BitcoinTalk.org forum that they that they publicly shared, because they want, giving him the option to come and stay with them and talk about Bitcoin, and because there were like so few of them
back then, right?
Yeah, during that period of time.
And there was only one podcast, Bruce Wagner's podcast.
Yeah, there were a few, but a few of them that were good. So you can see his route there. Or yeah, his proposed
wild.
Route.
That's wild, dude.
Yeah, eventually, I think it's to Alabama, and there's a tornado there, and he ends up helping with tornado relief there, and kind of keeps going. But he's in his Pontiac Firebird, and just makes his way across the United States. I guess towards the end of his trip, he stops really reporting on what he's doing. And then some of his last posts are when he's around Portland area.
Did he find the love of his life or something?
He might have. Billy the Kid kind of implies that he might have gotten caught up in the My Bitcoins rug pool.
Oh.
And that might have, that can depress a person who's very serious about Bitcoin. In the case of Bruce Wagner, he had roughly $750,000.
It's weird how all these, like, now that we're learning about the history of Bitcoin this month, I feel like all these intersecting things are all starting to make sense in my head. It's like this whole Bitcoin verse back then that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, think about how fun it was to be
back then.
How lonely, and then when you found other Bitcoiners, how unique it was. I mean, because I'll meet people who are like, I'm a Bitcoiner. And they're like sort of like a Coinbase or an ETF Bitcoiner. And I think in that period of time, if you met someone who was even a Coinbase or an ETF Bitcoiner, you would be like, you're amazing. Be my best friend. I want to talk.
Well, it's funny because I told you, my friend's the one that introduced me to Bitcoin through the thing. And I thought he was crazy. But I think everybody thought he was crazy, though. But I like crazy people. So I would talk to him, and that's how I found out about it. But I don't try to think like, I think we all come off that way. Maybe not so much anymore because it's actually a reality. But I remember in 2017 when I was like getting into Bitcoin really heavily, I remember people thinking I was crazy in my family and stuff like that. So I don't know how it was for you, but
I don't really talk to people about really anything, but yeah.
Remember that first time you heard about Bitcoin and you just want to tell everybody, you just vomited in front of everybody? Do you know what I mean? It's like I was like one of those.
No, I never did that.
You never did that?
No, I never really did that. I mean, I did. If someone asked me or started discussing it independently, I would have a lot of thoughts for them to share, but I would not really discuss it.
That was so transparent.
I just knew it was off topic. I knew it because like my interest was largely like politically directed, or I had known from my early anarchy days that no one gave a crap about
Bitcoin.
Well, what I thought about the monetary system and stuff like that. And so it was just pretty easy for me to take those habits into Bitcoin. But I really do wonder what it was like then. But they say a lot of the same things, or they have a lot of, but they had just had those thoughts so much earlier. Like they were either more sensitive or they had the right introductory point where they got it really, really soon. Cause many of us had a touch point that early, but it just didn't stick. But a cool story. And I hope Atlas is doing, or not, that's not Atlas, Plato is doing well. And it sounds like he fell in love with Portland.
Yeah. Cool stuff. That's all Keon stories. I don't have any this week. Let's jump into real quick the
what do you call me when I'm What do you, you like make fun of me when I don't have a story. No, say something like, oh, what are you? You don't care about the Stackers?
I don't say Coop? That. I really don't say that at all. So looks like the ones that we have for this week is just real quick. My takeaway of WWDC on Apple's AI strategy. This was posted by Zusportrico. And he kind of goes through kind of a rundown of everything that was released. Did you see any of this stuff? Was there anything that stuck out? A lot of it looked very much. It could have just been like, I think I saw one, somebody say this could have just been an email update. I didn't really see anything that stuck out.
Yeah, it was a WWDC. So it's very focused on mostly developer SDK stuff and
I missed
incremental improvements.
I missed the WWDCs where they would introduce new hardware. Like, feel like they don't do that anymore.
I think it just confused, like they couldn't, they wanted to like segregate the audiences so they could focus on one or the other. It just makes a lot of sense to have multiple like quarterly announcements.
Yeah. Or maybe they're waiting for everything to like transition off of Steve, Cook into Turnus. So maybe that's what they're waiting
when
for.
When does that happen?
I think it's supposed to happen later this year.
Fall.
Yeah. So maybe that's what they're waiting for. Yeah, I don't think anything really stood out here. Did you see anything that stood out on the AI side?
I tried to watch it. I just got kind of bored. I think they do. They have some cool stuff with splats and the 3D rendering of maps, which is kind of it like makes the maps look a lot cool, like the 3D maps look a lot cooler. That looked kind of neat. What else did I see? They had something. They allow you to configure liquid glass. Like they got so much public outcry for that.
Yeah,
they aren't sticking by their guns.
Whew, thank you for that. That was brutal.
Because
you wouldn't be able to see behind the glass. You wouldn't be able. That's a problem. You could see behind the glass thing. I think it just looks very much like the Vero. Was that Windows XP, Windows 7? I forget which one it was. Whatever glass one they had back then.
It is like a little too skeuomorphic, and it's weird. It's like very strange when you're also trying like taking the opposite position. Like we're not skeuomorphic except in our own like UI overlay. we're extremely skeuomorphic, and everything is like
it looks better like now. It actually looks better now. It actually should have shipped like this. Honestly, it looks really good now.
It's a bad sign that they're paying a lot of attention to the public. Like they are factoring in taste that is like consensus level on X about border radiuses and stuff. Because one of the other things that I saw was that they're like forcing every application, even ones that haven't been updated, to like conform to the more recent border radiuses. And I know that's directly inspired by lots of criticism they got online. And it's, you know, would Steve Jobs do that? He'd be like, screw you guys. I love liquid glass. But I love glass. Glass is beautiful.
He would have shipped something half-baked, you know? That's where I feel like
that wouldn't happen. What's half-baked?
He wouldn't have shipped liquid glass the way it looked a year ago. It looks fine now. It actually looks fine. It looks better. Like, I never don't know if you saw the new transparency stuff. It looks great.
I haven't had much of an issue with liquid glass, period. But I haven't been paying a whole lot of attention and haven't wanted to be upset and haven't paid a lot of attention to people who are upset about it.
I'm not upset about it. It's just annoying. It's just like an annoying thing. That's the problem with it. It's just annoying, especially when you use it for like work. Yeah.
I'm on an older Mac operating system. Super converted.
Yeah. The other one was Anthropic launches Claude Fable 5 and Claude Mythos 5. You got any thing to say about this?
Yeah, I have a little bit of field report from it.
Oh, okay, I didn't know you were.
Yeah, so I was. Anything. I was spending.
Here, let me pull open this.
I mean, I don't. I haven't. Like I haven't like read the actual. For some reason, the article's not loading. But I was code reviewing quite a bit using both Codex and Opus 4.6 for probably like 10 days. I was in and out of doing code review, and then Fable 5 was launched, and I ran Fable 5 doing the exact same workflow that I was already using with Opus. And it did find bugs that I wasn't previously finding with Opus or Codex. And the nature of the bugs that it found were ones that required like several levels of indirection.
What do you mean by that?
Like a function that calls a function that calls a function that references a variable. And a lot of the bugs that I would, or a lot of the things that I was finding before were only maybe a function that calls a function that calls a variable rather than several functions. So that was like one, that was one thing that kind of was a bit different, was I found a bug like that. And then when it did the exact same workflow that I had previously done, it went and kind of went much wider, and like kind of any file or concept it kind of touched, it would go and review that that related concept and found bugs in code that was external to like the diff that I was trying to review. Yeah, and it does I think have a better grasp of what it communicates better. I find it is less fluffy and gets to the point a little more when it reports a bug to me. And is able to communicate more effectively with me about the bug. But I'm spending most of my tokens on code review, so you know, maybe it's a different story if you're actually generating code. But I've also found it pretty good at generating code. I do think it is at least in my experience an incremental improvement over nearly every other model I've used. But I have been flagged at least 5 times for attempting to hack something or produce a biological weapon by it.
That's funny, dude.
Because they have this kind of like query filtering or message filtering before it actually hits the model that they're actively training, and it is hypersensitive because that's like their AI.
What are you asking it?
Mostly to review code. I was like, can you review this code? And I think what happens sometimes is it'll generate tokens that mention things like encryption or secrets, or if you're doing Bitcoin development, stuff comes up a lot.
That's a good point.
They're like, this is, you know, get you flagged as a hacker of some kind.
Yeah, because you're trying to figure out how to break encryption or something like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So is it a big difference than Codex 5.5 or GPT 5.5?
I found it much better at finding bugs than Codex 5.5. I haven't coded much with it yet, and I haven't done a long coding session with it. But at reviewing code, I think it is quite a bit better at finding bugs. I think it's really good at finding bugs. Mm. I mean, all of them kind of over-report things.
But you use max stuff, mode, right? You use like max mode.
Normally, yeah. So normally I'm using max, you know, X high, I think is the highest you can go in GPT. I'm using, and with Opus, I'm usually using max. Sub-agents, sometimes a little bit less reasoning or effort. But yeah, I think it is a meaningful improvement. I don't know what they did. Like there's something about it that does seem like a meaningful improvement, and perhaps it's not tuning on like exactly on the intelligence, but how it recurses on itself, and that like chain of reasoning part seems like it might have improved, like it's producing less hallucination each iteration.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Cool. Well, you heard it here first from Goob. So check it out or not check it out. Are you for yay? So are you using this as your normal now?
I'll use it to the it burns through tokens super fast.
Oh, so
they charge 2x the usage cost of it, and it produces like twice as much context, like internal tokens. So you end up like 4x the speed that you would use your budget. You end up using it with Fable. So I'm mostly using it for generating plans and code review.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because you just don't want to wait for having to review it slower, I guess.
So, it's slow. Yeah. I mean, it's quite slow. I want the highest intelligence to gate either starting something or declaring something done.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. We're going to jump into with that meta, because with all this Mythos Fable use that Keon's been doing, he actually has a release this week. Keon, tell us all about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is just, I call it wallet porcelain because it is primarily UI.
Okay, this is not your version of Glass.
Yeah. No. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna call it my version of iOS's Liquid Glass is wallet porcelain.
Stacker Glass.
Stacker porcelain.
Stacker porcelain. Actually, that's not a bad.
Yeah, this is like cool. It's a Git term that.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It's from Git. You're familiar with Git now that you're a software engineer. But
yeah, I understand. But I don't understand the porcelain. Is it because
it's a reference to, it's a metaphor for UI. Mm. Porcelain is the UI. Plumbing is the internals.
Oh.
Plumbing is like the back end.
So it's a toilet.
Exactly. So it's like a toilet. So the porcelain is the part that you interface with when you interact with the system. That's mostly what this release was about, was a new interface for the wallets, where we used to have cowboy credits and reward stats in its own UI, and then the wallets in a separate UI, and they lacked kind of a familiar wallet UI. And what this does is takes that credits UI and the wallet UI and joins them together. And
so you just choose between these two.
Yeah, you can just wallets. You can switch between them, you connect new wallets, you can reorder them.
Interesting.
Configuration is quite a bit more, I think, like UX friendly.
Can you just drag and drop, or is that what that is? Or you add?
This is an add, you're like adding a new wallet to that list of wallets. Most people don't have more than one wallet, but some of us are like kind of like trying stuff out.
Oh wow. So you go here, so you drag and drop. Okay. Then what happens?
That's like the configuration screen. So
this configuration screen. What does a wallet look like? Is it back here? Is it this one?
Yeah, so this is what you'll, if you've after you've configured, this is kind of what you'll get. And you can you send
from this wallet like you used to back in the old days?
Not yet. So if you click send now, it'll say coming soon.
So you can't do it like the way we used to when
it was custodial.
Yeah.
Yeah. It isn't.
The good old days.
Good old days of custodial. So you can't send.
Good old days when no one knew they were. That was the biggest difference back then, is no one knew they were using custodial.
We all thought.
You did. I didn't know.
I knew it was custodial. I didn't know it was illegal to run a custodial
wallet. Yeah, I think none of the plebs knew that they were using custodial wallets. But
yeah, they thought, they didn't realize there was much of a distinction.
Yeah.
So the next stage is plumbing, which is when I'll allow you to send and receive like it's a normal wallet, even though it's like an external wallet. And then the stage after that will be, you'll actually add an internal wallet for any wallet that has an SDK that allows Stacker News to not have to manage channels in a browser.
Wait, say that again, slower.
We'll be adding internal wallets. So things like we talked about Arc earlier, Spark, eCash wallets are potentially a target because they have this quality. What other wallets do we have that might be? There's a lot of like swap-based wallets, like Breeze's SDK. Basically just anything that doesn't require you to actually run a Lightning node in a browser. That's kind of what our hope is for internal wallets. We're missing a logo there.
Yeah, looks very early stuff here. Looks like it. But you're saying at some point we'll be able to just open up our thing as a wallet and then just start zapping. So I think that's the thing I like about the Albi one, is just like being able to open it up and zap. It's there.
Right. They spin up a node for you in the cloud, and you can
this will be able to work with everything, it looks like.
Yeah. So most of the options now are probably for someone who's a little more familiar with Lightning and Bitcoin in general. And the hope is that we eventually introduce an internal wallet where someone can come to Stacker News and they're curious about Bitcoin and they already have the Bitcoin wallet is built in, or the Lightning wallet. And the Lightning wallet is built in.
This is all open source.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at you. There you go.
And open the whole source. Thing is open source. The whole thing is open source. The wallets are open source. Learn, take, give. Cool. Anything else on here? I think there's a couple.
Oh no. Yeah. The other thing, socks. There was an issue where clicking on things would sometimes cause us to forget your scroll position. Like if you navigated to another page and then went back, you're like, why am I scrolled somewhere else in the page than where I started? That Socks did a lot of work to figure out kind of what the underlying cause was and ended up fixing that. And that was another part of this release in addition to some other enhancements. And then Optimism also had updated some packages there. I think Hampus from Blix also made a small patch for our wallet support for them. I'm trying to think of some of the other stuff.
The wallet stuff is really the whole another can of worms, I realized.
It is not. I mean, hug a Lightning developer or a non-custodial Bitcoin person, because it is not.
Wait, used it, to be? Is that what you're saying?
No, not just the way it used to be. It's not anything like adding a credit card checkout on your website.
Oh, really? Okay. So you're saying like it's harder than implementing Stripe. Or not harder than implementing Stripe.
It's a million times harder.
Oh, it's a million times harder. Okay.
You are running for every person who interacts with their website, you're trying to run Stripe in their browser or Stripe on their mobile app, because there is no, because you can't hold the money for them, which is what Stripe does. They're like a central coordination.
Has anybody figured out a way just to create out? Is Zaprat the only place that allows you to do checkout? Has anybody figured out like a wallet type of thing that allows you to plug that in as a Stripe replacement, basically, but for Bitcoin? Has that happened yet?
I don't know what exactly you're asking.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, has anybody figured this out? Like, where I could implement this into whatever. I guess Albi has done that already at this point. I guess Albi's probably the closest one. Where you can just, like, implement a wallet into, like, a Vibe-coded app that you made.
Oh.
Without having to, like, what you just described.
I think it's what Breeze is trying to do. I think it's what Spark is trying to do. I think Albi is taking
those are more like hyper focused on their specific platforms, but is there anybody doing like one of these where it's across a lot of different platforms?
Would they provide the UI for you, or
I guess it would be more like you bring your own wallet and you're
they made
the structure and the heart, I guess,
for you to bring your own wallet, an SDK for you to bring your own wallet? No, I would say not.
Yeah. I feel like that would be cool.
Yeah, but no one wants to give you that for free. I mean, for sure. We've literally spent like years working on this already.
Yeah.
And too much time.
Cool stuff. Cool stuff. It's there, open source. Learn from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Point your LLM at it and build it in your app. good luck. I think that's why we're open source. I hope that
somebody does do that.
I hope that someone does actually improve on this paradigm or get benefit from it. We take a really strange approach where we don't, I can't predict the future of Lightning wallets. So we try to.
Oh, this is what you're kind of like hedging.
A little bit. I mean, it's just, we can't, unless we can run the actual wallet ourselves, it feels strange.
Like, yeah, it's like you have to manage, you have to like basically think through the downpour of potential like political interests and like the SEC and all that kind of shit, and then you have the other Lightning stuff, ecosystem stuff, and
maybe a simple version of this is like if you look at something like what's happened with both Swan and Strike when they had third party custodians, and the situation got kind of weird there with that custodian now suing both of them. Or like basically you having a critical dependency on a third party, you know, this is what Bitcoin was designed to prevent, puts you in a weird spot. It maybe accelerates things for a year, but now you're in a really odd spot when things go wrong, which they typically do. If you're a startup relying on a startup, the other reason is I really don't know what the market wants in terms of Lightning wallets, because there is no obvious winner among all these protocols.
Cash App.
Yeah, but they don't offer a third party protocol. I think.
Mm. Oh, that was true. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, in many cases, I'm.
I feel like LDK has the lead, but I could be wrong. It's just what I'm seeing on the ground. I don't know. I think you're doing a good job.
Anyway, it's just porcelain. There's no internal wallet yet. It's just this is kind of a leading hint at where this is going.
Cool. Let's jump into, I think the last, nope, that was all our stories this week. Yeah. Let's go into the top Cowboys. Giddy on up. Where do I get the Cowboys? I always lose sides here because I'm always trying to find the Cowboys. But I can't find the Cowboys. So I go here, I click top, then they're there. There they go. Keon. Who are these people here?
Oh, yeah. So I think the top five has stayed the same. I think that's where Gray Ruby was last week. Scoresby has been climbing up in the ranks all year, almost in the top five. We'll see who drops out.
Sensei.
To give him a place. Yeah. Cryoto. Yeah, has really kept it up. We will get, they might be earning a hat soon. Billy the Cad covered their Play-Doh story.
Yeah.
R.D. Clark owns the DIY territory. Endothermic. Socks in 20th place. Maybe you saw the last podcast where we were making fun of him for only keeping his hat for a few days. Need
Creations there.
Need Creations. BitcoinEducation.quest.
There you go. This is the guy right here. This is the guy. Boom. Zap him.
I wonder, do you know what his... NIM means what the origin of need
probably needs to create. I don't know. I never asked them. Cool stuff.
Wumbo
Shocknet
of Wumbo picks Shocknet.
Peter Todd there. There's Carr. Who's that guy? And then there's Linus Pleb. Yeah, looks like we're getting a lot of people this summer here. Oh,
Mary Oscar.
Put up poet. Got who else? Yeah, 89. Last one is Pleb 85868. That's the top Cowboys this week. Let's jump into what's Keon doing this weekend. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
Oh, nothing. I'll probably do nothing. I might watch the Spurs game that you aren't gonna watch because you've lost your fan loyalty.
No, it's not that, it's just that I just yeah, it's like I know when a series is done, and I can't sit through that. I have a lot of things to do.
I prefer to watch when things are going bad, but have a very slim chance of going well.
If it goes to Game 7, I'll watch it. But like I have me going to watch these games is like putting me behind on my work.
Oh yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, if it's not like God, I'm just gonna work this weekend. So much stuff to do.
Fair. That's totally fair.
Yeah.
I might do that. I don't think I have anything else that is at all fun. But yeah, getting the wallets out or the porcelain out was a big deal. So that's nice to have that behind me, but that's about it. How about you? What are you
gonna do? I'm just gonna work at the work all weekend. I think that's pretty much it. Yeah.
All right, we're both boring. Yeah, see, this is why we need to whatever June, Seth, and his I forget the name of his co-host we're doing. We need to do. I bet they seem like they're skateboarding.
Oh, really?
The weekends. That's kind of. They were, I think, in SoCal. That might
be cool. Yeah,
they weren't working. They didn't have a Bitcoin job. They were talking shit.
Have yourself a great weekend, Keon.
Zap.